I know you're broken hearted, cause the peace you're hoping for is off the scenes apart. Thoughts and feelings often disregarded, so we're stuck here trying to stop what some others have started. Standing up
ladies
to fight doesn't
and
feel unjust,
gentlemen,
but doesn't
it
really
is
make
good
it right
to hear that song again. It has been 4.5 years since I last recorded a podcast with that as the intro music. This is We Love No Other from IlliniBoard.com. I am Robert Rosenthal, and this is my job now. So, I'm going to go through a little bit of that, and then we're going to go through an interview, and it's going to be a bit of a shorter podcast. If you're new to this, I'll give you a little bit of the history here, and then we'll get to this interview and get out of here. So, first off, people ask me over the years, again, I haven't done it in 4.5 years, but people ask me what the intro music is. It's a friend of mine's band. I believe they broke up in 2013, but they had a band. That song's from like 2008. My friend Russ and his band, Fundamental Elements. But they haven't done anything in like 7 years. However, when I started the podcast, the first podcast in like 2011, I thought that would be the perfect song, and now I don't think I'll ever want to do it without that as the intro music. So the band is Fundamental Elements, and the song is All Burns Down. So here's the history of this. I started a blog, Illini.com, in 2009. Around 2011 or 2012, I started recording a few podcasts like this. Wasn't really a thing, but when I had time, I did them. In 2013, I left Illini.com and joined up with John Brumbaugh at Illini Board, and we kind of combined our two sites, and I've been at Illini Board since. In 2014, I really tried to make a push on podcasts, and I was going to do them regularly, and I recorded a whole bunch of them up until, I think, early 2016. I think the last podcast was something like April of 2016. And then I just got to the point where I had a job and a wife and a life and trying to balance covering games for the site and going to work and everything else, and something had to go, so it was podcasting that went. So the podcast went away in 2016 and hasn't been seen since until today. So it's nice to have this back. So the reason it is back and the reason I am planning to do a whole bunch of these is I left my job in February to do this full time. It's been an interesting journey since then. 3 weeks after I quit my job, as we were packing up, actually the day we went under contract for selling our place in St. Louis, this thing called a global pandemic hit. And so the launch we had planned for March 16th for the subscription structure of the website got put on hold, and then we were getting ready to launch in August when they announced the new Big Ten schedule and like opening Thursday night before Labor Day against Ohio State, and then a week later they canceled the season. So I was sitting on launching all the new stuff on the website until there's actually, you know, something to report about and talk about. Thankfully, the Big Ten decided to reverse course and bring football back. And right after that, we went ahead and launched our new subscription structure on the site. So I work for you guys now, and there's a lot of stuff. I'll get to it in another podcast. We don't have to go into it now, but we are launched on that subscription structure on IlliniBoard.com. And one of the things that I said in that launch post that would be coming back is podcasts, and that's what we're doing here. I've always called the podcast We Love No Other. and we're going to keep that being the case. I'm going to try and do a lot of interviews like I used to. I like sitting down and doing some one-on-one stuff, so that's the plan. We're also, you know, I'll have basketball chats with some regulars and football chats with some regulars and all kinds of different things. So that's the plan for this. It's going to be a regular thing, so I don't know, in the next few, you'll probably hear me say some, like, podcasty stuff, like, you know, subscribe and like wherever you get your podcasts, something about Stitcher and whatever. But for now, this is just a, hey, I'm going to record one again. I have all this fancy equipment. I'm going to use that fancy equipment. And I'm going to start to figure out how this works. I'm going to do stupid things like hit these, like, buttons. There's like sound effect buttons on here, so I'm gonna do stuff like that. It's gonna get really, really, really annoying. I'm gonna use this as the we're Illinois football and we can't be trusted sound. So I have a lot I want to do with this. I've been kind of reformatting, and I got some new equipment, and I've been in these 6 months where I had nothing to do planning this, but I really didn't want to do it and get going until there's something to talk about. And so here we are, and it's time to go. So this podcast will be a shorter one. I was able to do an interview earlier today with Randy Ballard. If you don't know who he is, in the DIA, I think I even call him the COVID guru or something. He's the director of sports medicine and works directly for Josh Whitman and has basically been put in charge of all of everything related to coronavirus. So the testing programs for the DIA, the things they were doing in June when the athletes came back, of quarantining them in groups and testing and everything that's, you know, ramped up from there, of daily testing and the saliva test that the campus developed. I basically had him walk me through everything that they're doing, how they added in the Big Ten stuff, how, you know, all of this has led up to, you know, getting to a football game next Friday night where both Illinois and Wisconsin are in the green and can play the game. So I'll get right to that. I'll come back at the end and I'll close out with some things. But for now, here's my interview with Randy Ballard. Actually, wait, one quick thing before I get to the interview. I want to apologize for the sound quality. My plan was to record it through all my fancy new equipment. And when I went to set it up, and I thought I had it set it up, and I tested it and everything else, the mic wasn't working. So I went ahead with the old school, just record a phone call. So the audio isn't the best. Apologies. That will improve. I'm a bit too much, not really a perfectionist, but I care a little too much and wait and wait and wait until it's just right and then screw it up anyway. So that's not the best audio. It's just a recorder phone call, but we'll get that better in the future. So here's the interview.
Okay. So first, I just want to go over the general kind of in the DIA how things work with COVID. Your title, you know, obviously you didn't sign up to be, you know, the coronavirus czar of an athletic department, but that's, you know, I'm sure become your job lately. So let's just start with general for people who aren't familiar with you. You know, how long you've been with the university, what you do, what you've moved into with the pandemic, and where you're at right now.
Absolutely. So I actually arrived here in Champaign-Urbana in August of 2001. I initially was hired as an assistant athletic trainer to work volleyball and women's track and field. I was blessed enough to work with great administrators like Ron and Ron Gunther and Al Martindale, who supported my growth as a professional and as a person, and was allowed to evolve as a professional and over time took on more responsibility. And with the various transitions that we had in administration when Josh came on board, he offered me this director of sports medicine role that wouldn't have sports oversight, that I would just work with our athletic training staff and physicians and healthcare partners to provide care for our student athletes. And so been in this role since essentially the summer after Josh came on board officially. I was the interim director of sports medicine for about 6 months before that. And as you alluded to, you know, over the last 5 years to 5 to 10 years, obviously we've seen a huge influx in the challenges and the needs around mental health in our student athletes. And so we've done a lot to kind of evolve as a sports medicine department from, you know, a classic sports medicine and maybe a general illness provider perspective to covering and offering way more mental health services. And now over the last 9 months have added viral pandemic and epidemiology and a host of other, you know, kind of areas of our shop and operations. And so, you know, starting back in into February, early March, we started putting plans in place. And then as things really increased there in early to mid-March around the Big Ten tournament, started learning a lot and putting things in a lot, putting things in place in terms of protocols and guidelines and looking ahead, but also working with local healthcare partners. CU Public Health, McKinley Health Center, and Carl have all been phenomenal partners and collaborators and lended expertise to help us do what we're currently doing.
So let's start with maybe June. So you start bringing students back to campus. You know, where I'm going with this is, you know, in June there was a certain way that you were doing things that's evolved
yep.
as the saliva testing came online and has evolved
yep.
even further when the Big Ten put in there, here's how it has to work. So I just kind of want to walk through that whole thing. So starting
Absolutely.
In June,
yep.
you brought, you know, obviously football's starting and that's the big one here. So we can maybe just concentrate on that, but you brought in students at a certain, you know, 10 at a time, and they were working out as a group. Let's just talk through how the summer worked.
Yeah, so off the top of my head, I think it was around June 8th. So starting on June 8th, we welcomed back our first group of football student athletes. I think over the course of the summer, we ended up having about 4 to 5 different waves between a few different waves of football student athletes and then men's basketball, women's basketball, volleyball, and soccer. And so actually I moved over to the recruiting lounge there on the south end of the stadium that looks out on the football field to have better reception to take this call. And it's kind of ironic because in the same space, starting there in early June, we essentially set up a COVID testing center here in this facility. And so student athletes would show up. We would temperature screen them, check them for symptoms. They would then do a blood draw and get an antibody test. We did antibody tests on all of our returning student athletes this summer and fall. And then at that time, we were doing the full-length nasopharyngeal, the long swabs. We had nurse practitioners from McKinley performing those. The student athletes would get that nasopharyngeal swab. They'd pick up their meals there for the day, and then they would go to a place in which they would then quarantine for 72 hours. At 72 hours, they'd come back and they would get another nasopharyngeal swab, go back into quarantine. And then once we had 2 negative tests 72 hours apart and we got 2 negative test results back, then we allowed them to move into their normal apartments or residence or wherever they were staying here locally. Once they got moved in.
Yeah, for their quarantine, it was like you had dorm set up for individual rooms since it was the summer. How did that work for you?
Yep. Yeah. So each student athlete had an individual room in a dorm, and they were asked to stay in that room. They were only allowed to leave to go for a walk and get some fresh air. Otherwise, they were in their rooms. We were providing them meals. We put that plan in place with campus and local public health. You know, there was a host of institutions around the country that just brought back student athletes and did one test and called it good. We felt it best in terms of our student athletes, but also our community to take a much more rigorous approach and talking to numerous people, CU Public Health and on campus doing that test 72 hours apart, retests. We felt really good about once we kind of let them out of quarantine that we would have a much better confidence in having you know, a clean and healthy, viral-free group. I think we may have been the only school that did that in the Big Ten, possibly in the country. We did that again in August. We actually had student athletes test negative on the first test and test positive on the second test. So I think it worked. I'm very grateful that that idea was shared with us from public health and campus. But yeah, to your point, we would keep them quarantined away from anybody in the community, away from any other student athletes. And then over the course of June and even into early July, each week we would bring back another wave and another group and repeat the process. Once you were through that process, then yes, we started strength conditioning activities. Those group sizes were limited to 10. We tried to keep those groups related to roommates, and so trying to keep small little clusters of people who are around each other, almost like a family group, if you will. And they worked out, conditioned in groups of 10 then over the course of the summer. And then in August, we did the same exact thing over the course of 2 to 3 weeks with the remaining student athletes. Before August, we had about 160, 165 student athletes on campus amongst those five sports. We brought back cross country early to mid-August and then everybody else after that. And so over the course of summer, we performed over 3,000 COVID tests. Before starting the saliva test, we actually partnered with the Shield Group, and we're doing side-by-side saliva and nasal swabs over the course of the summer, helping them getting their operation going up and them helping us getting our operation up and running. And once they got through that process, then weekly or twice weekly, depending on sport and risk around sport, we would then retest everybody. And so, you know, in this space, essentially 4 or 5 days a week, we had a full testing center. It wasn't drive-through like the one at Carl, but it was walk-through. We had nurse practitioners. We had phlebotomists from McKinley. Our athletic training staff were here starting as early as 7 in the morning and sometimes going to 1 or 2 in the afternoon performing COVID tests. And so, like I said, we did over 3,000 tests this summer. That might be more than anybody else in the Big Ten. If it's not more, that's probably top 2 in the Big Ten. We haven't really compared our data, but we were very aggressive. We were able to be aggressive based on our partnerships with CU Public Health and McKinley Health Center and Carl. And we tested that way all the way through summer and getting everybody back onto campus. Once everybody was through that process, then we transitioned to the saliva test. And since the start of school, we've been using the saliva test with our student athletes. Starting about 2 weeks ago, all these days run together. I feel like it's 2 weeks now. I think we started on a Wednesday. So, yeah, essentially 2 weeks ago, we started the Big Ten antigen daily testing program. We are already doing daily saliva testing with our football student athletes, and so we layered that on top of what we are already doing. And so, you know, from a data and a testing perspective, thankfully, because of what campus has developed here and the Shield Group's developed, we have far greater access to testing than probably anybody in the country. Our student athletes across the board are probably getting tested more than any other student athletes in the country. And I'm really grateful to be on this campus and in this community. I think we are showing how you should respond to a pandemic, and I'm very grateful to be here.
So let me ask about the antigen test, just side question that came up as you were talking there. So I guess what does that inform? You know, I know there's debate of, you know, the medical community of, you know, if someone shows that they had it back in March and they are they immune? Is there, you know, I guess you don't assume immunity for those people and such. So say a student athlete tested and they had no symptoms, they weren't active, but they showed antibodies that they had it, didn't even know it in the spring. So what's the difference for that student athlete?
Okay, well, let's just real quick, and I think this is one of the challenging things for all of us around COVID. So you initially started the question asking about antigen, but really what you're talking about is the antibody question. And so, yes, we did test.
That's going to happen a lot.
Yeah, no, you're good. Yep. You know, between quarantine, isolation, there's a lot of things that get really confusing. So I always want to make sure we're as clear as possible. So in regards to the antibodies, you know, we had student athletes who came back in August, some of which reported having some flu-like symptoms, some reported never feeling like they had the flu or COVID or anything, who may have tested positive for antibodies. To your point, that doesn't mean that they can't get it again. There's still a lot of questions and research. They're still getting tested on a regular basis. We did, though, go ahead and based on what we consider best practice, we had each of those student athletes follow up with our sports medicine physicians from Carl. They did a clinical exam. They went through family histories. They went looked at a lot of different things. And based on that clinical exam, the opinions of our medical providers, the desires of the student athletes and their parents, we were then doing cardiac testing before it was mandated by the Big Ten if we felt the need to do so. And really, that's why we put that antibody testing program in place starting back in June. One of the things I didn't mention was that early on, we had a former alumni, a student athlete who had run cross country and distance on our track and field program here early in the 2000s. Actually, was here when I first got here, who reached out. He actually works for Abbott Labs and kind of consulted with us just out of the goodness of his heart and being a proud alumni. He provided us a lot of information and talked about, while there is some questions around the antibody test, it probably would be useful just to know and be able to follow up on those who may have been exposed and never noted. So not a lot of places did antibody testing on everybody as they brought them back, but we thought it was important just to do our due diligence and try to provide a very high standard of care for our student athletes as we brought them back.
Got it. So I guess then the transition is then, you know, I think most fans are aware of what the campus is doing and the number of tests. And it's past 500,000 now. And, you know, most are aware how Illinois is out in front of this, thanks to the development, you know, going all the way back to March of this testing and the ability to do it on campus and to do process so many tests per day. So I guess my question is, when that was online, how did... I guess maybe it's more of a personal question of, like, was there any frustration when football was shut down from your end of, hey, we are testing daily and we won't even allow someone onto the facility without it. You know, we're in shape to be able to play. You know, was there any, hey, can we put this in play at other campuses? Was there anything like that of saying, hey, Illinois kind of has this figured out. Maybe we can do this fall.
Yeah, and I think really it starts with what you said. And I think there is anybody associated with Champaign-Urbana or the University of Illinois, I think, is aware of what campus is doing. But I think there's a difference between really, an awareness and really truly understanding, like, this is not happening anywhere else in the United States. Shoot, this isn't happening in some places in the world. And so, yes, there was a host of emotions when some of those decisions got made. But as we talked to colleagues around the Big Ten and heard that some schools didn't have access to testing, or if they did have access, it was taking 48 hours or even a week to get results back. And so knowing that at some point we were going to have to play a competition, and there was a lot of concerns about, you know, making sure that we knew that everybody who stepped onto the field was clean, viral free, that was going to be a huge challenge. You know, I think all of us just dealing with all of this, there's a host of emotions. You mentioned frustration. I mean, frustration, concern, but I think so many times those of us who, especially in the medical field and in college athletics, you know, a lot of it's just you go to the student athletes. And so while we might have our own personal frustrations or opinions or feelings, we care so much about these kids and student athletes. And so it was more of like, how are we going to support them? We can't dwell too much on the decision. It's kind of out of our control, but how do we best support the student athletes as we work through that cancellation and continue to look ahead to how we can try to make this work and how we can support other Big Ten institutions, and how do we do what's best for our student athletes?
So with the season back on, when it was announced, I guess this is two part. Let's first start with, you know, football workouts were still going on. I think it was 10 hours a week or whatever it was.
Yep.
So 12, what was like that. What was the student athlete protocol before mid-September when football was announced as coming back? So what, you know, late August, early September, what the 100 or so scholarship and walk-on athletes coming into the Smith Center, what are they experiencing daily? Is it just their campus testing, or is there specific athletic department saliva testing that's happening when they enter the building? How did that work?
Yeah, so they were, you know, once the decision was made, we continued to do daily testing with our using the saliva test on campus. We went back to, you know, kind of some walkthrough activities and strength and conditioning activities. You know, obviously with the state of Illinois moving to phase four over the course of summer, we could expand group sizes from the size of 10 up. We still made sure that we could, you know, we looked at square footage and rack distribution and worked with Lou and their staff, and Jeremy Bush, our football athletic trainer, has been tremendous. He deserves a lot of credit and a lot of praise for all his work on this. But, you know, we kind of set group sizes based on the layout, square footage, social distancing. And so they were doing strength conditioning and walkthroughs. They would get their daily campus tests done through that process. And a lot of it was just engaging Coach Smith and the staff, and Lou and his staff, our sports medicine staff, our mental health staff, our academic staff, just trying to support and keep the student athletes engaged. You know, I think our biggest concern was without, you know, the unknown. We're all right now dealing with the unknown. And so dealing with the unknown, are we going to have a season, or what is the spring season going to look like? Just making sure the student athletes were staying engaged, that they were continuing to maintain, you know, healthy habits, mask wearing, et cetera, that they weren't, you know, making poor decisions of, you know, just going out on a Friday night and exposing themselves to a lot of people or things like that. So it was much about keeping them engaged as it was just making sure they were getting their daily saliva test and we were getting negative results.
So at the time, if someone did test positive, is that, I guess at the time, since that was saliva testing, was that then entered, did that follow the campus protocol, or were there different protocols for student athletes?
It was both. You know, we worked hand in hand with campus and CU Public Health. And so anybody who tests positive has a minimum of 10 days in isolation. And so we had a protocol where we were going to isolate them that, you know, our one staff that I haven't talked about is our sports nutrition staff. They've been phenomenal. I mean, you talk about having to deliver meals and do other things. We're all working outside of our job descriptions to some extent and dealing with the pandemic, I think. And so,
sure,
you know,
sure,
we have a protocol in place in which, you know, we isolate them 10 days. We monitor their symptoms. We check in with them multiple times a day. We're collaborating with CU Public Health. We're doing contact tracing. We're quarantining anybody who's deemed a contact. Coaches are checking in, academics is checking in. And so, yeah, anybody who tests positive, we have a protocol in place that's based on campus's protocols, CU Public Health protocols, and our own protocols to ensure that we're limiting the spread both within our student athletes and within our community.
And so then when the next layer is applied, when the Big Ten says, okay, we're going to play and here are the testing protocols, which – I'm assuming you had to go back to more nasal swabs and such like that because of what the Big Ten required, the same testing for all schools. So how does that change for the daily testing of a student athlete?
It just adds another layer. You know, I think one of the great things about the saliva test, and for those who aren't on campus, I mean, it's really efficient. I mean, you can I walked over to the testing site yesterday, and I was in and out of there 2 minutes. As long as you know how to generate saliva in your mouth and can spit in a test tube, you can get in and out of there really quick. So, you know, that's a much quicker process than the how we first started the summer of, you know, I would go drive over to Carl and wait in line in my car, and then it was my turn, get swabbed. So it's a much more efficient process. And so it just added another layer. With the antigen test, it is a point of care rapid result system. I'm really grateful that I think we got the company that we partnered with Quidel, has shown really strong results in terms of sensitivity and specificity. But, you know, it is a nasal test, like you mentioned, a nasal swab test. They do it, they put it right in the machine, and you get your results back anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes, depending on how many people are in line and many machines are in use. And so they get their results right then for the antigen test, and then they go on into the building and go through taping or, you know, whatever they need traditionally, what a traditional day before, you know, day looks like with practice and what they traditionally do before practice and everything else. And so it just added another step. It added the antigen test, added a little bit more time, obviously, in terms of waiting for those results to come back out of the machine. But it just added another layer to what we were doing. And I think, again, we're all adjusting these new normals. And so, you know, I think that's kind of a new normal for football, and it will be for basketball. And then all the other sports as we move ahead through this process, it just takes a little bit more time. And then, you know, once we go on the road, figuring out what that'll look like in terms of testing the morning of the game at the hotel, and the Big Ten still working through that and hopeful to release some of those details here later this week.
So when I guess, is it accurate to say when a player tests positive, they wouldn't get in the building that day? In other words,
And so they do the nasal swab, the antigen test. Yep, exactly. And, you know, that's kind of interesting.
No one really would see another player in any capacity each day. They have to get a negative test before they're around anyone else. Is that basically accurate?
Well, let's just be clear. So see, that's a strong word. They're going to see other players, but as they come into the building, they're coming into the building socially distanced, and they get everything's done very socially distanced. So they get their swab, they sit in chairs that are spaced out more than 6 feet apart, and they sit there socially distanced with their mask on. So there's no spread occurring. They're not contacts that way. We're following all the guidance from, you know, in terms of mask wearing, social distancing, all those things. And then you are correct. That's happening outside the actual, you know, confines of the Smith Center. And so then correct. Once they actually walk down into the entrance and into Smith Center, they're not getting green lighted to go on into the building and start through their process until we have a negative antigen test on them that day.
Got it.
Does that make
Got
sense?
It. Yes, it does. And so then if there were to be a positive test, you know, we're hearing a lot about, you know, other conferences and contact tracing and, you know, coaches grumbling about, you know, I only really had one player test positive, but all seven of his roommates are out for 3 weeks and, you know, just grumbles here and there in this. So what, I guess maybe if you can walk me through the process of if there were a positive test, how does that impact other athletes that maybe his roommate or whatever? What are the protocols there?
Yeah, and so if someone were to test positive on an antigen, they would have a confirmatory PCR test done. You know, there is a chance of false positives, not a significant percentage, but there is a chance of false positives. So they would have a confirmatory PCR test performed right then, and then they would be put into isolation following our typical isolation protocols. We would then follow contact tracing guidance. Obviously, they would have been tested the day before, and so that guidance would be based more on their social contacts in the evening before. We're testing first thing in the morning, obviously, with morning practice. And so really, we would then work hand-in-hand with CU Public Health. We would interview and talk to the student athletes, find out, you know, the evening before who they had been around. You know, I think sometimes people joke about, well, college kids just play video games. But at the end of the day, if you have two roommates who haven't sat in the room, living room playing video games together, but have actually been in their rooms playing video games or doing whatever and been smart about social distancing and other things, you may not have to deem the roommate as a contact. But that's something, we're not making those decisions in isolation. We're working hand-in-hand with CU Public Health, determining if there are any contacts. But where they would have had a negative test the morning before, going on to the practice field or into the facility, we feel really good about the risk of spread following that negative test.
Sure. Okay, so then my final group of questions is centered around the Big Ten, you know, red light, green light, yellow light kind of stuff that came out. So Well, first, I guess, just for those, you know, I've talked about this several times in things I've written, because people were confused at first by the word community, or however they phrased it. People thought, or population, that was the word. So
yeah, population, yeah.
People felt that the population number was the state number. So, hey, Wisconsin's positives right now are 11%. Can we even play this football game? And I believe I actually heard you on a call explain how population is just anyone around the football facility, trainers, yep, student assistants. That's, they want to make sure those people are at a very low percentage of positive tests, as well as the players. So can you explain those two, the player testing and the population testing?
Yeah, so you have the two metrics that the Big Ten laid out was the daily positivity rate. And so that's very, very much like what people are used to seeing in the paper or on the university dashboard. You know, that's basically the number of tests and the number of positive tests in that day. And then those are calculated over a 7-day rolling average. And then that's what that green light percentages is based on when it comes to positivity rate. In terms of population, the population, and again, you know, going back to words you never thought you would know about, but, you know, there's this idea of a congregate group. And so the congregate group, to your point, is the 170. The Big Ten set that number at 170 individuals around a football program that are a congregate group that we're asking them to really kind of isolate, bubble themselves from the community as much as possible. Obviously, people have to get food. Coaches have to go home to families. But as much as we can, we need to try to keep that congregate group as isolated from other people as we can to try to limit spread amongst that congregate group. And so that population positivity rate then is based on the number of active cases in that 170 based on a 7-day rolling average. So let's say you had 10 people. We've never had that number, but let's say you had 10 people in that 170. You know, you 10 divided by 170, there's your number, and then you go by the percentage. Well, you average the 7-day previous ones, and then that's your number for your population group. It's likely the Big Ten will do that for all sports moving forward, but that population would be based on a sport-by-sport basis, not on an athletic department or a community or a state in general.
That's very interesting, because the 170 number is very interesting, because I had this conversation with some friends, and, you know, the obvious question comes up of, okay, well, you know, say the number at Nebraska is getting really close to the line. What's to stop Nebraska from saying, actually, we have 37 student assistants this week. And, you know, like, you know, could the number be played with to hit the percentages just by adding more people to the group? But what you're saying is the Big Ten said 170 is the number. You tell us who your 170 people are that are closest to the football players, and those are the people you're going to test.
Yeah, and, you know, to use Nebraska as an example, I'm sure Nebraska had to come up with, you know, I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know what our active roster number is, but, you know, let's say a Nebraska who historically has a ton of walk-ons, they probably had some decisions to make of, are we going to have as many walk-ons this year, or are coaches' numbers, you know, how are we going to get to that 170 mark? Because I know everybody was looking at the, you know, the total number of people that's around a program and deciding, all right, who's going to be in that 170.
Got it. Yeah, so then I guess the final question is, what's the I know you can't give me numbers, and I know those are released. How, from the Illinois perspective, what's your general sense of how things have gone so far and how things will go this season? Because you talk to one person, and they think, well, with daily testing and the protocols the Big Ten laid out, I think all 14 teams are going to be good to go every game. And on the flip side, you see Baylor and other programs that have had crazy cancellations, and Houston couldn't play their first three games. And other people think, you know what, we're bound to have one or two teams in the Big Ten that are going to play four games this fall. So what's the general sense, if you can tell me, of how that's going and how those numbers are going to come out?
Yeah, you know, I would start with I'm very grateful. I actually emailed our student athletes on Friday. You know, I think one of the things we all have to be careful about as any member of society is we can't get complacent. You know, we have to continue to do what's getting asked of us, the mask wearing, hand washing, all those things. And we've asked a lot of our student athletes and staff. This is a challenging time for all of us, just in terms of all the extra layers and steps and let alone the mental health perspective of just the unknown and maybe not being able to go home as much on the weekends and other things. And so, you know, I'm really grateful that they have done what we've asked. They're making smart decisions socially. They're wearing their masks. We're not having to hound them about that. They're doing everything we've asked them to do. And so, you know, our incidence of dealing with the virus, I think, is probably really low. Especially compared to some of our other Big Ten colleagues. But part of that goes back to we're in a community. You know, I looked at the dashboard this morning for campus, and I think it's like, you know, 0.2%, and Champaign County's under 1%. And so, you know, even if they are going out to get a meal or do something in the community, go to class, that chance of spread's less than, you know, you mentioned Wisconsin, which is really, you're seeing a huge increase there in cases. And so, it takes all of us, it takes our community, it takes our campus, but especially it takes our student athletes and staff being really smart about what they're doing, not just inside, but outside our facilities. And so I feel really good about what we have in place. You know, I'm very grateful to campus, our ability to, you know, test going into this, to have healthy habits, to testing habits. Our student athletes know what to expect. They're seeing that if they make smart decisions, those numbers are where they need to be for us to continue to move ahead. And so I feel really good about what we've done. And, but at the same time, I think we've all learned during a pandemic that things can change in a heartbeat. But, you know, in terms of the testing program the Big Ten's put together, I think it's as robust, it's more robust than what any other conference is doing. And so I think if someone's going to pull it off with as few a hiccups as possible, I think it is going to be the conference. And we're grateful for, you know, what the conference has done and our colleagues around this conference as we look to kick it off next week. But, you know, there's going to be positives. You know, some coaches' kids going to bring it home from, you know, for playing with friends. And but thankfully, we'll have daily testing that will be able to identify that and mitigate the spread. And so, I'm not going to guarantee that, you know, nothing's going to happen, but I would say that because of all of our partners and all the efforts of our student athletes and staff, we're better positioned to accomplish that goal, I think, than maybe anybody.
Okay, I lied. I have one final quick question. It's just a quick question because someone asked me this the other day. Is there a date for this game is on? Like, is there the Thursday before? If you haven't heard of a cancellation, then, you know, red, green light, red light, yellow light. Is there a date for each game, or is it could be canceled the day before kind of thing?
You know, I don't think the conference has totally finalized that aspect. And so I have not seen a drop-dead date. Obviously, with testing the day before a team leaves, or even game day testing, I guess there could be an immediate decision that would have to happen. But as of, you know, whatever time it is now today, I have not heard you know, like a decision for Friday night's kickoff has to be made by, you know, Wednesday, next Wednesday at 5 p.m. I have not heard of any details surrounding a drop-dead date or anything like that for the conference.
Okay. All right. Just a thought that hit me as you talk. Listen, I really appreciate this. I think it's really important that, you know, there's so many questions out there, and it's such an unprecedented time that I really appreciate you walking me through all of it.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
Okay, so a big thank you to Randy for walking me through all of that, and a thank you to the DIA for setting that up for me. I just really wanted to start there because that's really the only topic that really kind of matters going into this season. Like, it hit me the other day, like, wow, we're only, you know, I think we're 12 days away from football, and like, wow, this is it's almost here. And then it's like, what, you know, it could be gone. Like, we could hear an announcement, sorry, Wisconsin has 7 positives and 9 players in contact tracing, game canceled. So, So yeah, this is all that's going to matter this year. I think the Big Ten has done it right. I think Illinois has hit a grand slam with COVID testing on campus. I still wish it was getting more national attention that to do this themselves and to have the number at like 0.2% right now on campus is just incredible. So kudos to the old alma mater, because that's just amazing. So that's it. We are back. Welcome back to We Love No Other. I am so excited to play the outro music here, because it's been so long since I heard this song from my friend's band. And so, yeah, it's just great to be back doing this. I have a lot of plans for this. I have a lot of exciting things coming. I'm so excited to be here. To all subscribers, thank you so much for your support. I basically put my career in your hands and you responded, and I can't ever thank you enough. So I'm just going to sit here and do Illini stuff all day, every day for the next 30 years. So, so thanks for listening. Thanks for coming back to We Love No Other, and there's a lot more fun stuff coming. So, you know, that's all I got. Go Illini.